that's an interesting exercise. It took me a bit to recover from it mentally. We had to take a break. The human experience usually remembers the sour way more than the sweet, and I get that. Another aspect of it as well, though, is, I mean, at least for me, from me now, and I've said this a few times, the experience that I lived through was so enormous that it pushed me into this new life, which is a weird one. Like in a lot of ways, I consider it like an afterlife for myself. Like, because I legit made a plan to kill myself or to put myself in a situation where somebody else is going to do me that favor before 30. Like I 32, you know, Jesus window is what I would call it. And it just didn't work out. I found myself sober, wife left, sobriety, a bunch of friends that I thought were my friends left, you know, a few horrible, destructive relationships that I thought were gonna solve something for me, kind of made me even more insecure, unsure, and added even more trauma on top of everything. I found myself in a place like Tom Hanks after in the movie Castaway, when he's at the end of the movie, he's in this crossroads just fucking trying to figure out what he's going to do with the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Everything that he fought tooth and nail with everything to get off that island to be with the love of his life.
Yeah, Kelly, Helen Hunt. Yeah. Good movie.
I, in a lot of ways, did the same. Like, I fought tooth and nail and risked life and limb to create a future for my family. And now that I was on the other end of that, my family dissolved. So I have my daughter, who's my family, and I love her to death. And I kill myself every day to just have time with her. So, like, I'll travel, like, a lot of red eyes, basically. But in the end, I didn't get the ending that I wanted. Or at least, you know, it's this empty, like, vast freedom in a lot of ways, which is scary as fuck. You want to talk about scary? Like, I remember just being in a place where my time was always full because I had to do all these things. I had 4 phones, a radio, all this equipment, 80-something people under my command, and I had to, like, figure everything out, and I was always... Now it's just dead quiet. It's a dead quiet room somewhere, clean, and it's... I have a business, and it's great, and I'm stable, but it's just... But there's nothing. It's just... It's weird. I have all the options in the world, but I don't want to take any of them, basically.
A weird crossroad to be at, but...
Yeah. Yeah, you're again, it's this whole aspect of, like, hey, you're supposed to get something at the end, or you're meant to have a happy ending, or you're meant to have some sort of weird conclusion that you're like, oh, this is, you know, I grew up watching movies. I guess that probably poisoned my mind
for sure.
You know, there's a lot of work that we do on ourselves, and we expect relief. I don't know what we expect. I think everybody probably reverts mentally back to where their original trauma originated, back to that original age. I think in a lot of ways I'm still a 13-year-old kid who's still trying to figure out how to be an adult, or how to get the attention of his parents when both of them are severely broken by the loss of a child, which matches up to a lot of the decisions that I made later on as far as doing 110% for people that ended up destroying parts of me.
Mm-hmm.
When when you utilize some of the tools like you just used on me with people, like specifically on like people that you work with, what's the reaction that you get? Like, is there hesitation? Is there anger? Is there fear? Mental health is a whole world that is very misunderstood. So
it kind of depends on the person. I'm not an expert. I don't have a degree in psychology. A lot of the stuff I was just sort of trial by fire for me. And I started to take note early on and I just kind of had an ear for it, but I also was that person within my clique that I would ask, you know, are you good? But I would mean it. I wouldn't just give the generic. And if people weren't good, then I would make it a point to kind of probe a little bit more. And, you know, even in my office where I work now, no one really knows who I talk to or who I, you know, spend time with or whatever. And that's with intent, because it's no one's business but their own. If they want to share it, that's on them. But the majority of my experience is talking with people. It's usually almost like you kind of get bit a few times on the hand, but it'll work out. And it's never going to be easy, and it should never be. If it's easy, it's not an issue. If it's hard, it's an issue. And I don't want to discredit, you know, minor things, but the harder it is to talk about something, the more important it is to talk about
it. You should talk about it, yeah.
And a lot of guys and gals get wrapped up in this, you know, I just can't put it into words. That's okay. And then...
So a lot of the writing that I do is directly related to me trying to put words, 100%. Put it into...
Uh-huh.
Like, how can I communicate this so others can see it? Instead of having the TV screen on top of my head with what happened, how can I put that into a...
And maybe it's because you don't want to cry. I don't want to cry right now. I hate crying. I don't want to. So me talking about this will make me cry. So I'm not going to talk about it. Fair enough. Can you write about it? Can you, if you're artistic, can you draw a picture? Can you write a poem? Can you do something that would make it not even necessarily make sense, but just remove that from your head? And a lot of people, you know, it's far and few between that you'll get 100% cooperation. But with, I think, the right amount of persistence, and this is just my own findings dealing with my personal experiences and seeing people either actually kill themselves or almost. And it's interesting because I think of all the people that I've talked to that didn't kill themselves, I always capitalized on that, and I would really pick their brain. And usually when you put someone on a mental health hold, it's a lengthy process, so you will spend a significant amount of time with them. But I would always ask them, like, and not necessarily for the report, but just my own curiosity as to, like, you know, the old saying goes, the talkers talk and the doers do. And when you get someone who you essentially stopped from killing themselves, their intent was to do so, but for whatever reason it didn't work out, it's very interesting to hear their experience and to sort of understand why. And the deeper you go down that hole, I think that we would be shocked as humans to see just how similar we are on a core level, and how there are just certain things that cannot be explained or put into words. And, you know, you may just hear, well, I'm depressed. Well, that's one word to describe maybe an infinite amount of emotions or feelings that otherwise won't exit that person's mouth. I think that where we are now with not just limited to COP, but I think first responders overall, I think there's just, it's an abnormal thing to see. And I've said this before, but the more you experience these horrible things, it makes it very difficult to see anything else as normal for the rest of your life. And with COP work, you're going to be like kind of the first responder if there was a true get there first type thing. So you're going to see a lot of shit before, and I'm not knocking the fire guys, but you're usually first on scene for some really weird shit. You're going to have to mitigate all that. And the more that you do something over and over again, it becomes normal to you, but it also becomes expected. So car accidents, do they happen a lot? Not really. But when you're working a job that requires the, you know, your assistance in that regard, then you're going to see it. So you're going to assume. And so those assumptions trickle down to family and they trickle down to your kids. And the next thing you know, you're kind of a little bit more paranoid when your son or daughter starts driving for the first time. You have this, you have an unrealistic fear or phobia of them dying in a car accident when the likelihood is very slim. And that goes for every other thing that you see and do. So I think one of the more important things that we can do internally as cops is we can start to normalize the conversation when it comes to mental health. Not that it's much better than it was when I started. It's much better than it was 5 years ago. But in terms of longevity and retention, and it doesn't have to be this whole, you know, kind of kumbaya type thing where it's, you get those really salty guys. They're not going to go to any of that shit. They don't want to go to a meditation class. They don't want to go to a breathwork class. So that's okay. But you can find an alternative that's going to help. And I tell people this all the time. Anyone who says, I don't need to go to therapy, anyone could go to therapy and you will have something to talk about eventually. Relationships are a huge thing. I used to say I'm really lucky for the relationship that I have, but that would be a lie. It's not luck. I had to work really, really, really fucking hard to make my marriage what it is. I have an amazing wife who's a huge part of it.
That's like a big issue that I've seen. And like, what do you think about? I didn't get the opportunity to have a partner where I could share with because that was just not available.
Yeah.
While I was going through what I was going through. It was a rule that I didn't come up with, but there was a rule there about not bringing work home. And whenever I would have any experience, like the bad day experience, I would have to swallow that. Mm-hmm. And culturally, I was in Mexico, I was shown never to show weakness or break down in front of your wife because that's insecurity and they're going to leave you.
Yeah.
Because that's the culture.
Culture is huge.
And that's also a fact. Some women will take, will see you or hear you sharing something of that nature and freak out.
Yeah.
Because you're not safe anymore. You're not stable. And women are all about security. So what's your opinion on the amount of information being shared by somebody in that type of community? You say that you were pretty lucky because you had to work on your significant other, and I imagine that you can share some of the stuff that you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky because I have an amazing wife. She just came that way. That's her being awesome, and I appreciate that. But she was with me before I was a cop, and in my first few years of law enforcement, there were some I didn't understand them to be pretty critical incidents. I just sort of said, okay, this is the rest of my life, and looking back on it, there were several where it was just beyond abnormal. And I remember being new and I would leave for work and she would kind of come say goodbye and give me this big kiss and, okay, be safe, have a good shift. And I remember I after like the second week, I said, stop doing this shit. Stop kissing me like I'm going to war. I'm going to work. I'll be back in 14 hours. Don't make this a bigger deal. It makes me freak out. So stop. That was my first kind of just like, this doesn't need to be a big deal.
Adjustment.
Right? Yeah. The likelihood of me getting hurt is extremely slim, even though it feels like sometimes it's not. But I just told her, like, you have to just kind of chill out a little bit. And again, at the same time, we had a new baby. We had all this stuff that these just huge stress factors that were coming into our life. And When I first started coming home and kind of saying, because she would say, how was work? And I go, it was okay. We pulled an infant out of a car that went in the river and mom was on PCP and the baby died. And I remember like, she knew like that there was going to be stuff that would happen. And I kind of decided that I would maybe remove a lot of that from, you know, our relationship and sort of keep it a secret. That wasn't a good thing. And
I editing yours.
Yeah, it didn't help that I downplayed things, because then when I would explode later for something,
there was no context, because exactly. Like what?
Mm-hmm.
So so your significant other will fill in the blanks.
She has to.
Right. So like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't know about all these things we didn't share.
Yeah.
So something she's thinking the worst, maybe in some ways, I guess.
And it's not to say, it's not a woe is me thing. Like, a lot of people get caught up it doesn't have to be a feel bad for me type thing. It's just, if you feel the need to talk about it, talk about it. But if you don't want to, you don't have to, but it would be like saying there's a cookie cutter design for each relationship. And there's not.
But that's a key thing you're saying. It's not a woe is me thing.
No, it's not.
Like if you asked me like, what would I expect from a significant other if I'm going to arrive home and I'm going to share a story like the one that I just shared with you, like a bad day story. Empathy.
Empathy's big, yeah.
And also a reference point mentally, so now they understand why I'm quiet for the rest of the day, or why I might have to go through a period of that I can't manage and or deal with other things.
Yeah.
In the span of this time.
Yeah.
So that's all I would expect. I wouldn't expect anything else. I wouldn't expect that you have to baby me, or you have to turn into my mother or something like that, because some women have that in their mindset. Like, I'm not your psychologist, is something I heard. Or, I'm not your mother. This is something else I heard. None of these things are expected.
No.
What, at least on my end, all I expected was like, hey, I'm going to act in a really irregular way for the next few days or maybe weeks because some shit happened in my life, really bad shit. It's not about you. It's not about us. I want to keep you safe from it. That's why I'm telling you what happened. That's kind of the logic behind it. I don't know if it's a right or a wrong one, but it's on my end, I think it's better to say something than not say anything and just have the other person fill in the blanks.
Yeah. A really powerful tool to use is I do want to talk about it, but I'm not ready right now. That's a fair, that gives them, understanding of what it was. And it depends on how far you want to peel back the curtain. In my younger years, I didn't want to scare my wife. So I wouldn't I would downplay a lot of this stupid shit that we would get involved in, or just stuff where whatever it was, I would, oh, we had this guy. It was a pursuit. It was nothing, but it was like, shit, we're going 125 miles an hour on this scary road and just whatever it was. I never wanted to alarm her, but then the fun stuff started to take the back seat, and I started to really realize that the heavier shit was starting to affect me more. The fun stuff was easy. The scary stuff wasn't hard for me to talk about because it was a cool story, or, and you have that uncle at Thanksgiving who says, oh, tell me something, tell me the craziest story about work. And if I were to be honest, I would probably say something. No, it was the day that a coworker blew his head off. That's the craziest day of my career. And it's like, that wasn't even anything crazy, not even a crime. Yeah. But that would be the honest answer, not the pursuit we got in or whatever it is. So I started to sort of understand that if I kept her in the dark, it was not good for me. It wasn't good for her. And it depends on the partner. And this goes for if you have a husband or whatever it is in law enforcement, whatever the family dynamic is, you have to gauge that person's ability to stomach it. Because some people, like my mom, I could tell her, I remember years ago, and I can't remember what even happened, but I told her, she asked me something about work and I told her the truth. To this day, she still is like, oh my God, I remember that story. And it was a nothing, but I just told her the truth one day. But she's someone that I probably wouldn't.
We're numb to the abnormality of our existence because this is a daily thing.
And I was even sugarcoating it for her. I could have gone into the nitty, but I didn't. But that's just, I figured out what her max was. My wife, I think she's just, we're a lot alike, but we're also very different. But her ability, as the years went by, and I think she saw because I was just a little bit more open about what was happening. And then when I really started to understand that if I didn't explain myself to some degree, that I would have to explain it to my kids. And once my kids started to get old enough to understand what was going on, not just me being gone all the time or me being whatever, and dad, why is dad asleep? Well, he worked last night. They don't understand. They just know that I'm sleeping. But when I started to realize that they were taking mental notes of what happened, when we had a deputy who was shot and killed, you know, it was on the news. It was, everyone was talking about it. And my son, who was, I think he was 11 at the time, he asked me, he said, you know, dad, what happened at work? And I said, oh, well, you know, and I remember in my head thinking, like, how do I say this? And I just said, well, there was a cop who was shot and killed. And I just saw his eyes get like big. And I just went, oh, fuck, here we go. I didn't want to lie to him, but I also knew that what I just told him probably sent him into a fucking tailspin of, is this going to happen to my dad? Is this going to happen to my family? And I hated that, but I also didn't want to lie. And there was no way to hide that because so much was going on. I was in detectives at the time, so we were doing a bunch of stuff at work and I wasn't home. And I had to kind of figure out at that time, you know, systematically who was going to have the most exposure, who was going to know. And with my wife, I would say like in year 5-ish, it started, I just said like, if I had something that was undescribable, it's funny you mentioned the TV on top of your head. I always tell my wife, I wish I had a USB port. I could just go, bloom, watch it later. I don't want to fucking talk about it.
Yeah.
Because talking about it is exhausting. And it's not that I didn't want to share. I just didn't want to talk about it and explain it. And then I would short stroke it and explain it. And then maybe she's like, well, that's strange. Why would that affect you that much? And the funny part is that it doesn't take a catastrophic incident to really affect the brain. It can be one thing.
Yeah,
it could be tied to a trigger, a smell, a taste, or whatever it is, especially sensory. And that may come up later on.
Yeah, that's another thing about traumatic experience. It will leave vestiges or tattoos in your brain related to a smell, a taste, a song, a color. Like there's a bunch of things it could be.
Have you ever smelled something subconsciously without, there's not a smell, but you can remember the smell, which is even weirder.
For me, it's dentist.
The teeth?
I had the experience of cleaning out my hair and finding teeth fragments in it. And the smell.
Very distinct smell for the
having a tooth cap exploded open. That shit is just like, it just.
But to anyone else who's none the wiser, you know.
None the wiser. You know. Like, I hate going to the dentist for a lot of reasons, and that's one of them.
That'll do it.
You're having this internal experience while some of these shit, some of the stuff happens. And if you can't communicate to people around you, or you have your significant other that doesn't know about these things, they internalize it like, what did I do? Like, what's wrong? Like, what am I doing wrong?
Which is why you see a lot of divorce. You see a lot of domestic violence. You see a lot of, and it's not an excuse. Like, I know that's kind of one of the things that people, for like the cop haters, they'll be like, oh, look at all this domestic violence. Right behind that's the military. I mean, it's obvious. It's par for the course.
Yeah.
And it's not an excuse. But I think that a lot of cops, if they really understood kind of what little work it takes to change just some small things, you'll see big differences. But it really depends on, my scenario is pretty unique, but I wouldn't also say it has anything to do with coincidence, because I had to work really hard. My wife had to work really hard. We had to work really hard to create the relationship. And this is 15 years later. So it's not like this was just out of the box. We had this great.
There's work involved.
Yeah.
And getting to a place where you're like strong enough as a couple.
Yeah. And that takes time. And you can't rush that. That's just one of those things that.
And there's also like a growth together.
Oh yeah.
I guess.
And experience and life experience. And if you're challenged, like we, we kind of had the opposite of the honeymoon. We had our kid before we were married, and then it just life started. So we had a lot of challenges ahead of us, and I think that kind of made us a little more appreciative of the easier times as life got more stable.
Yeah, I met my ex during I was already doing what I was doing, and I think there was a big part of me that kept her safe from it and away from it.
Intentionally.
Yeah. And then there's this giant mystery of like what happens in this time that you're not here.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it turns into suspicion.
Sure.
And anger. And
misinterpretation.
And thinking that things that are happening internally are about them.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest fear when I started becoming known publicly, because I my popularity online was kind of paired with my life basically going into the fucking toilet. Like I was going through separation and alcoholism and all that as I was exploding online. So I was, my biggest fear is people would find out that I was a raging alcoholic and I was all fucked up internally. That was my fear. Like, I'll eventually find out that I'm a fucking horribly broken, traumatized man, you know? And I remember having a friend of mine say, like, why didn't you talk about it publicly? It's like,
I don't know.
No, I can't. I'm in this realm of online instructors that are, you know, shooting guns with the American flag in the background with a chick with a bikini next to them. You know, America, you know, extreme ownership, 4 a.m, do weights, badass people that, you know, nothing phases them. Like, all of a sudden I'm going to raise my hand and say that my tummy hurts, you know? but I read this thing in a bathroom. You can't pickpocket a naked man. Like I read that in a bathroom fucking wall and I'm like, fuck. So I started publishing these fever dreams is what I would call them.
Yeah, I read a couple of those.
Some people don't know that all of them were for my therapy.
Nice.
I would write these for therapy. And then a friend of mine told me, like, what's your worst fear? Like that somebody reads these and like online and they find out that I'm a mess. And I started posting, you know, like I remember posting the first one, just like,
see what happens.
And I thought I was going to get, a bunch of people just saying how much of a weak person I am or how fucked up it is or whatever. And I started getting a lot of people basically like, oh, somebody put into words what I couldn't or that helped me.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. Like the whole aspect of like, hey, you were able to put into words something like it was struggling to like express,
yeah,
I guess. And as I did that more and more, I started feeling less alone with it, I guess. Because there's a weird lie that happens to people with trauma is that you start getting into this, I don't know, masochistic narcissism where you're like, all this shit is happening specifically for me and God has a very specific intention to just fuck me over and it's very special and it's just me. There's nobody else. Everybody's having a great time here and it's just me. It's a weird narcissistic, like you feel you feel special in your suffering. Like it's only for me.
Special,
like,
in the worst way.
Yeah. I'm like, none of you know. It's just me. But it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like everybody's fucking going through some shit.
Yeah.
So the whole aspect of going through group therapy and just actually sitting down and listening.
If you compare, and not that the comparing is not a bad thing, group therapy rarely, like, the buy-in only comes, it's almost like there's a little bit of kind of warming up and then the guy who hasn't said anything for 30 minutes suddenly tells the story and everyone kind of goes, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, what?
For me, it was like a month and a half. Like, I didn't want to see.
You sat there and, yeah.
I remember walking into my first one and it was in SoCal. A lot of Marines in that group.
Pretty wild.
But I remember just sitting down and hearing stories. And some of the battlefields, some of them coming back home and finding another dude at home.
Yeah.
You know, some of them more personal, like some of them like, oh, that's why you joined the military, you know?
Yeah.
A few others of the people that weren't even in the military. There was a guy who was a rodeo clown in one of them.
Interesting.
He was, I was 38 and he was 32 or 33. His spine was fused together. God. And he didn't look 33.
Is this kind of like anybody can show up type of group therapy?
It's a special group, but there's somebody behind it that kind of takes on some pretty extraordinary cases, I guess.
Interesting.
And I was chosen because I'm fucked up. I am, I guess. Somebody knew about my story, and you know, they just channeled me to this group. The rodeo clown dude was an interesting case for me. I heard everybody's story. Almost not everybody's, but I was like quiet and listening. And you know, eventually, I kind of stood up and kind of talked about my, and you know, there was a lot of oh shit and quiet moments there while I was telling my story. But I'd been going through these meetings for about a month now, and I would hang out with this rodeo clown guy. You know, he was you know, punk rock kid too, acid humor, you know, skeptical about shit, suspicious. Like, ah, this is like me. I'm gonna hang out with this dude. And he would like orientate me. We were cool. We'd hang out outside after. But after I told my story, he got quiet with me. Like, I felt this weird rejection from him.
Hmm.
I couldn't figure my finger on it. And I was like, hey, what's going on, dude? Like, did I offend you somehow? Or like my story
too much, or
yeah. Like what's going on? And he takes a big drag out of a cigarette, spits on the ground, and says, I went through a career being a rodeo guy and then a rodeo clown, and now I am broken in my 30s physically. Can't do that anymore. I didn't go to school. I don't have any I don't have a lot of options as far as what to do with my life. I invested all my time and energy in this, and all I got for it was a broken mind and a broken body. And you're doing something with your pain.
Yeah.
And I don't hate you. I don't have anything against you, Ed. But you're a reminder of the fact that I did all this shit for nothing. And it was such a weird observation. And I had nothing.
Yeah, what do you say? Sorry.
I had nothing. Yeah. I had nothing. Like, yeah, I'm an asshole. I'm a fucking asshole, I guess. So I just, you know, I gave him space.
Yeah.
I'd hear stories in that room every night. And eventually he came back. He came back around. You know, typical man apology, which is like, yeah, you're a faggot. Yeah, you are a faggot too. Like, we just became friends again.
Yeah.
You know? But the aspect of mental emotional nudity. You know, just like, hey, this is the shit that I hide. Just yeah. like opening up that shirt.
You never know till you ask. Or
yeah. And I don't think I've been on my own for about 3 years, a little bit over 3 years now. Like when I say on my own, I mean, it's just me and I see my kid every week, but it's basically just me. And I'm deathly afraid of, you know, whoever comes next, you know, like if they're going to be cool with that. And that's another aspect of it that people kind of don't realize, this feeling of being a leper, or this mm-hmm. kind of leprosy aspect of it, where you're like, you know, every now and then I'd read these memes online about red flags and just like, oh, stay away from this person, stay away from that person. And I go down that list and I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I got a lot of them flags, right? Despite working on a lot of these things and stuff like that, you're, you know, there's a weird cross section of being, you know, on this healing process and self-awareness. But at the end of the spectrum of self-awareness, it's like, holy shit, I just know for a fact that I'm not good for these people over here. Mm-hmm. So isolation. And,
yeah.
And that, again, the whole aspect of being Tom Hanks on an island, trying to make his way back to somebody that he's going to start a family. But you make your way back from the island and you're fucking alone.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things that I think people, a lot of people end there when they figure out that on the way down.
Yeah.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the Dead Drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urban wear, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
It's, if you can figure out, you know, with the red flag thing, I think, especially with relationships, you know, you might have to find someone who's going to be able to, I feel like sometimes we try to find someone who will understand it via interest, which is kind of the most self-destructive thing you can do. And I see a lot of, especially in law enforcement, marriages fail when the spouse is overly involved or too involved or tries to make it an identity of their own. And there's nothing wrong with that if it works, but it's almost better if the person is sort of a yin to your yang. They're going to be able to, they can still process everything and be there, but they're also not going to say the wrong thing that will make the issue worse. Like, I hate referencing my wife so much, but we figured that out pretty quick. And she was really good about, she just would listen. She really didn't ask a lot of questions. Not that she didn't have them, but she just would sit there, let me regurgitate.
What does she do for a living?
She works for a hospital, so she works from home. Her job's the opposite, polar opposite of mine.
Yeah,
definitely. So we have this balance, but it took us a while, especially me, to figure out. If you go into a relationship of any kind and you expect it to be 50-50, you're going to fail.
Yeah, you're fucked.
It's not going to be 50-50. And
not always, at least.
No. And if you understand that, you know, it might be 60-40, and that means that the other half's going to have to pick up 60% of the slack while you're on this 40% for whatever reason. And you sort of have to understand it's not personal. You may be 70-30 for a year because of whatever my own bullshit. When I went through my mental health, I can't even imagine, because I flip it. I look at it and I go, what if I was on the other side? And I'm like, man, that sucks. What would I do? I probably wouldn't be a very good partner. I mean, I'd try, but personality wise, I don't know of how successful I would be in the realm of understanding when it would be hard for me to understand why she felt that way, given, you know, I don't know, what if the tables were turned? Who knows? But it's just really weird to think about those parallels and how there needs to be an understanding, but the kind of the concept of the 70, 30, 60, 40 is eventually that person's going to build up resentment if you're not making the attempt to change. But like I said, if that expectation is there and that person goes 50% and there's this gap, that's where we see that divide. Yeah. And then relationships will eventually fail because the person's going to be expecting that.
Yeah. For me, it was, I think a big, I don't blame anybody for my marriage kind of failed. I blame myself, of course, because I'm pretty good at that, you know, a lifetime of learning that aspect. But, the blockage of communication and the rules that were set around it, and the rules around the help that I could get, you know, like you can get this type of help, but if they start giving you pills, that's not allowed. So you have to scale it back. So like, holy shit. Like,
so there really can't be rules though. If you set things in stone, that creates a wall that you can't pass, and it shouldn't be a wall. It should be like a corn maze. Where if you really want to get out, you just run.
Yeah.
And keep running. Eventually you'll break free. But if you create a maze that has impenetrable walls, then you have to keep going, and you're going to keep going until you go insane.
Yeah, but there was, you know, I come from a place of chaos. So like I see rules and regulations of safety, or like I try to figure out ways of kind of parameters to kind of like solve some of that for myself. And I imagine women have that as well.
For sure.
Pronounced. You know, again, I asked you about oversharing and sharing too much or not sharing enough. Like, what do you think that balance should be? Like, I know it's a big factor in a lot of marriages ending, the domestic aspect of it as well. And we'll talk about that after. But how much is too much?
I think that's going to be up. And this is kind of a lame answer, but it's up to the other half.
And if you know, and if the other half is like not willing to listen, is that just an indication that you should probably look for conciliation and just like,
It depends. So, I mean, let's weigh it out as, you know, do we have a family? Do we have all this stuff? How can I fix it? If the answer is yes, well, then you got work to do. No one likes hearing that. But if the answer is yes, then we need to figure something out. I think that sometimes the concept of doing public service comes with this really prestigious, awesome thing. And then when you get down into the weeds, you realize how fucking terrible it is.
Yeah.
And the facade fades away. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where it kind of creates a jaded perspective from the spouse where they become resentful sometimes, especially if the agency is toxic. It could be a number of things, but exposure for the job itself. I mean, personally, when I started to really dive into the nitty gritty, whether it was photos or it was me trying to explain something, my wife had the stomach for it. So she wanted to hear it. But I also think that she figured out early on that the more she heard, the better she would be. So she figured out that even though it was unpleasant and it didn't really make her feel good, she got a snapshot, a small percentage of what I was dealing with internally. So if I told her, you know, so much information, she had a better concept of understanding how I felt based on her emotional reaction. So she would sort of dictate her response based on what I told her. That got harder as life got busier. So there's been things that I haven't even told her that I didn't purposely not. I just didn't have time, or I just, forgot about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like do a report every day when you get home. Yeah,
it's exhausting.
But there are certain events in your life where you're going to stop yourself.
Sure.
It's going to give you a pause. It's going to make you change behavior around your spouse maybe or something. And I think that's if you could give it advice to somebody considering marrying a cop or going into a relationship with a cop, even though, you know, all the bad press we get, you know, what advice would you give a woman? Like, hey, you're going to get in a relationship with this guy. this is the advice I would give you.
I would caution them that, you know, with this career field, there's all different kinds of personality types. So whichever one you chose to marry, that's on you. There's good ones. There's bad ones. There's destructive ones. Yeah,
why did you get into that field is, I guess.
Yeah. That's a great nexus question. And then it also kind of shows to the caliber of the person. Like, I think you and I are linear in a lot of things so that we have that same personality type. But there's a lot of guys in law enforcement who are the opposite of us who, I mean, they might even be not good cops because of that, because they're so just, this is my life. And identity in this job is, I do tell people it's just a job. And it is, but it's also a calling.
Yeah.
And we need that mindset to be successful. But you also can't literally live this job as if it's a lifestyle, because one day it won't be here and you're going to go nuts trying to figure out your purpose. So if you're purpose driven and all that ties into, you know, what a spouse can expect, I would just tell them that if there's, it's going to be a ride and you're never going to have the same year twice. You're going to have good years, bad years. You're going to have promotional processes. You're going to have, and with promotion comes all kinds of bullshit. I got detective and my wife was stoked, but I was like, get ready. It's not worth the money and you'll see. And here we are. I love what I do. I've learned so much, but I had to give up so much shit to get it. So where do you draw the line? I don't know. That it's such a very wide and very dismal sort of skew on how you choose to prioritize what's important. And from a spousal aspect, they should push, but sometimes silence is a good tool. So it's one of those things where it's going to be based on the individual. But if you don't do a good job kind of understanding the personality type that you got involved with, you can tell. I mean, if you're a good judge of character, I mean, you can know if someone's a douchebag in the first 30 minutes.
And also the job will change.
It will.
I've gotten the experience of seeing very nice, quiet people turn into these, you know, Tasmanian devil people.
Sure.
Because they need it for work. And when they adopt this mask for themselves for work, they're like, oh, I like this mask. I'm going to wear it at home.
Yeah, not a good idea.
that's you know, road rage shit with somebody's off duty.
Yeah. And you shouldn't be that different though. So if you're really good at what you do, you won't have to wear anything. You'll just be you. And one of the best style of policing that is to be very real. You shouldn't have to put on a badge and feel better or feel more powerful. That's you. It's body language, it's all that stuff where, I mean, you can see it a mile away. The guy who's just like, you're doing this for the wrong reasons. You're trying to prove something. You're going to end up hurting yourself or someone else, and you're going to do something stupid.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, those are the ones that make the headlines. And those are the guys that paint a very unrealistic picture for the rest of cops across the country. I mean, you could look at all the major pendulum swings that we've had over the years. It was because of someone usually who lacked training, or there was just, they're never normal. They're never,
there's always level-headed. Whenever this is new, all the shit is new for me, but like whenever I see one of these cases, like the one that just came up, where was this?
The tea kettle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy.
He'd been fired like a lot.
I've watched that video many times.
It's pretty bad.
And I rebuke you, you know, that word came up and he said that he felt threatened when that happened. I've been in rooms with real threats. Yeah. That wasn't one of them. And I've seen why guns are the, you know, like that's the first solution. You know, everything's a nail if you just fucking hammer, I guess. But seeing his history.
Yeah.
Seeing all the shit that went on in his past, and another aspect of fucking standards being lowered and just fucking people being desperate just to get bodies in squad cars out there in the U.S. But that was, I mean, that's like everything you could do wrong.
It was pretty terrible.
And the amount of damage it does to.
Oh, it's one step forward, 1,000 steps back. And good luck if you ever get to be I mean, even now it's better than it was 4 years ago, but we'll never go back. We can't. And every time we have one of those pendulum swings, we're going to have to do 10 times the work to, and this isn't the first time. It won't be the last time. It's sad to say that, but it's true. This will happen forever. As long as there's an expectation of public safety, there's going to be mistakes that are made, some just more egregious than others.
Like, we hear a lot about the internal policies and just the you know, we're all part of the Blue Brotherhood. Keep quiet. We'll keep ourselves safe and, you know, fuck the public, I guess. Is there some of that in the culture?
There is, but I would say these days not as much as there used to be.
What is killing it? Body cameras? The people going viral online after they do an interact? Everybody's a camera now, basically.
I think lately it's just been, everything's been magnified to the point to where it's...
Everybody's a potential camera now.
Oh, so yeah, everything. Like, everything's on camera.
Like, and I remember having the experience of working in the age where that wasn't the case little bit, and then now it is. So I understand that change, but like, I'm trying to... Corruption happens in the U.S. in the police departments. Like, I get a lot of fucking jokes about Mexican cops being corrupt as shit. I've been in some places in the U.S. where, you know, cops are shady as fuck too. Oh, yeah. Do you think that is, where does that come from? That is it regional? Is it because people are just not getting fucking paid enough? Standards? Like, what is producing some of this environment where somebody gets fired multiple times, ends up in this lady's kitchen and shoots her?
Yeah, I mean, so there's, when I hear corruption, I think of the traditional, which I would say was more in the probably the 50s, 70s, and 90s, where we have the literal,
here's some money, monetary, look at the other way
stuff. The corruption that we see nowadays, I would say it's statistically, it's far less than it's ever been. And the public would say, no, it's not. It's this and that. Like, in terms of, like, people actually, you know, literal corruption in cooperation with a lot of other cops, it's very rare. But for the incident, like we talked about a minute ago, that type of stuff is going to be based on the residual effects of 2020, where we have these standards that are so low that people are, I don't like to say forced, because no one's forced, but they are essentially making a decision. It's a gamble. This guy may work out. He may not.
It's an omission.
Yeah.
Like, corruption can be an omission.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just getting money to shoot this other competitive guy.
Sure.
It could also be just, like, inaction.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to fucking do.
And you see and that a lot the other more. Way. Look at Derek Chauvin. That's a great example of, everyone really wants, they want to capitalize on the incident itself, where the cell phone video. No one really wants to go back and look at the full video, which is very long. And you get a lot of people where, you know, oh, just comply. And yeah, that's true. Had George Floyd complied and everything, it would have been a done deal. He probably would have been cited out and had dinner with his family, more than likely. But it escalated and it kept escalating. Freezing nowadays, I think, is even worse. It looks worse than action, because at least you can try and explain yourself versus not doing anything. But for the hot water one, I mean, that was just it. One, it looked bad on a variety of levels. The use of force was just bizarre, and then the after was even weirder. The audio was terrible.
Yeah, when I talk about elements of corruption, I also watched the video when he was getting processed and the conversations that were happening while he was getting processed.
Those
and all
were
of that.
Terrible.
All of that is like, there is a truth. I get that some of the, you know, Black Lives Matter is a sham. It's a fucking sham. And that's been proven multiple times. These people are living in mansions. And, but elements of that frustration and screaming for, like, justice and shit like that is a legitimate thing.
Oh, for sure.
We've gone from, you know, call the cops. To, like, call the cops, but turn on your camera phones.
Uh-huh.
And I don't feel safe with you because you're a cop. And, like, it's the dynamics have changed completely. This weird rule set has changed. But when you see that video of them trying to negotiate what happened.
Yeah.
And trying to like figure out how to mitigate or make it less.
Yeah.
In such a shocking case of just fucking use of force.
And it's terrible because for that one video, in that same hour, on that same day, there were probably 10,000 other videos across the nation
where they're doing
that was smooth. Everything went great, and they did the job right.
They're doing again. I'm not shitting on law enforcement in general. Like I have many friends in law enforcement. I have some people who are criminals as well. Yeah.
It's perspective, though, right?
Like, it's the perspective aspect of, hey, I'm not in law enforcement anymore. I'm a citizen now, and I'm fleeing a country in a way, like I had to leave Mexico because it was dangerous. And now I am in a country where I'm experiencing some of the same elements.
Yeah.
And they're very familiar. When you have a shooting like that, when an agent is using force of this, like that, you know, and the after effects of it, like walk us through what a real event like that would look like on your end. You have somebody, a police officer that just used force on somebody. What happens after? I mean, let's say there's going to be an investigation being put on this individual. You know, body cams are going to get reviewed, but like between that and a charge, what happens to that cop?
It really depends on where you live. I mean, geographically plays a huge role.
That's another aspect. People think that
it's not universal.
Like everywhere, the same thing. No. They're gonna get put in isolation. This is the procedure.
Sure. Yeah,
and it's gonna happen. No, that every single one of these corporations is gonna do it differently.
Counties have different policies. So when I talk about cop stuff, it's specific to California and maybe even where I work, because every agency is going to have a different policy on what most of it's universal within that state, but they might have something different that they do along the way.
Your agency, somebody is.
So our pretty standard practice is once that there's a shooting, we'll have the critical incident protocol is activated. So you'll have a variety of agencies come to the scene. So not just ours. So it's multiple, which, helps with bodies, obviously, for assistance, but it also eliminates corruption.
Yeah, it mitigates the thought process of somebody just manipulating everything because they're a single agency.
Oh, yeah, and if you have one agency doing all that, well, of course, that opens the door for what happened. So multiple agencies doing multiple things. There might even be, if it's big enough, the feds can get involved. We had that happen one time where they came in and assisted us with the scene when... But after that, they will isolate. You get your reps for the ones who were involved. And
the shooter, what happens to him? Like, what happens to him? Like, does it get, like, this talk us through, like, no, we've never been through it.
So if there is.
The shooter gets his gun taken away, I imagine.
Yeah, but not in a, and it, so like one of the things that I really like how we do it is for that individual, this is a huge moment. It's fucking terrifying. It's scary. I was really impressed with the last one we had where I felt like it was really smooth and there was a lot of transparency. There were a lot of people there, but not too many cooks in the kitchen. So employee retention for anything like that happens in those moments. Am I being taken care of? Are my questions being answered? You know, it's a lot to do that, especially to take life that will forever affect that person. And obviously other avenues of people in the community that traditionally, yeah, they're going to isolate you, not in a negative way, but you get put with eventually you'll get a rep. But
can you call anybody?
Yeah, I mean, they usually do. So they'll do like a public safety statement initially that kind of goes out as, you know, what happened. But again, speaking from my agency, yeah, they usually let, hey, I'm safe. Everything's fine. You know, this is what happened.
Can I call a lawyer?
It depends. So that depends
again,
on
again. These are questions
that might,
anybody would ask.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the policy that's currently in place. A lot of things are changing in a good way to include statements. There's a new process that I'm a fan of, which allows for a full REM cycle. So you go home and sleep.
And then you interview.
And there's been studies that have shown that a full sleep cycle drastically
changes the statement afterwards. Like, I mean,
they recall.
You have to process like a traumatic event like that. You have to let it.
And people solidify. Will say, "Oh, it gives them time to make up stuff." It's been the total opposite. They get to remember.
Now, we talk about like isolation statements, allowing them to sleep is great at home. Basically, they get released. Yeah. Is there any sort of like eyes on them?
It depends on the scenario, and usually they get their clothing taken. They'll get their gear.
Are there any worries about people utilizing the firearms on themselves?
Like suicide?
Yeah.
I mean,
unless there's some shit happening there.
I think that's more of an internal, you know, kind of a one-on-one thing.
Do people get disarmed?
They'll take the gun for evidence purposes, but traditionally, no.
They won't ask you about guns at your home or like that?
Unless they have a reason to, probably not. Most cops, and I've seen this on some scenes where you get a gun right away because you just got in a gunfight. Then the last thing you want is to be unarmed.
Unarmed.
So they'll usually get you a piece on scene and at least get you squared away. Sooner rather than later.
That happens. Is there any help provided? Anybody that you can talk to?
So on hand, initially there's clinicians. So within that critical incident protocol, especially for an officer involved shooting, there's a variety of things that can be available.
Are you allowed to say no as an agent? Can you say like,
you do have to
I don't need to talk to anybody. I just want to.
No, you do have to do an eval at some point, and that's more of a later on type thing. That's normal, but depending on how proactive the agency is, kind of dictates. And I'm very happy. California is a horrible place to live, but it has some of the best training, the best options, the best, I would say, like moving forward efforts for taking care of it, like making sure that, you know, even the community aspect too. I'm huge on transparency. It's not a good idea unless there's a reason to, unless there's something that would compromise the investigation or whatever the case may be that would not be conducive to the case, sharing it sooner rather than later is huge.
They can't speak to the press, I imagine.
The officer?
Yeah.
No. So that's why they have a public information officer. They'll take care of it.
It's like an understanding that they can't speak to anybody.
Usually you're told no.
How about social media?
Bet no. Nothing. Just
again, I'm asking all these questions as somebody that
has it like, happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where people will say stuff.
Like, go online and say, hey, I'm okay. I got into the situation. Is he going to be in trouble if he fucking goes online?
Depends on the policy.
And
that's the P word that everyone gets hanged up about.
What about being, how about if, like, is there any cases of a situation like happening where they're like, hey, let's drug test you?
Yeah.
Toxicology.
So that's also
something. Is that automatic or is that something that gets asked for?
And again, there's going to be people who say, no, it's not true. This is within my agency or my state.
That's traditionally. We're speaking specifically about your experience and your
traditionally,
reality.
No. But if there's reasons to believe, so if they smell alcohol or if there's whatever it is that they think. There's
reasonable suspicion.
Yeah. Then they may say, cool, we got to do this.
But it's not something automatically done.
No, traditionally, no.
Okay.
And again, speaking from my own experiences, no, some agencies will do, you shall do a blood draw. You shall do whatever. It depends on.
Are unions or people watching out for the specific interests of the officer, like a factor?
Yeah. So you'll have like representation. It really depends on if they have their internal affairs department get involved, which is standard for most of the agencies in California. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people get really. Rather than think of it as being like invasive, try to think of it as the agency's doing its best to be transparent, which will ultimately, especially if the shooting's a good shoot, it's going to make your life much easier, especially for civil litigation down the road.
What protections are there installed in there for the families of these officers when they get involved into anything like that, which is going to be maybe going into the press maybe, or if it's like something big like that, is there anything like set for the families as far as like, hey, they're going to dox you and they're going to show up at your house.
Happens a lot.
Which is, you know, very common.
I think the press, they've leaked a few where addresses get published or they'll put it on like a website, like usually BLM. This is back when that was kind of a popular thing. They would leak certain addresses.
Yeah, docs. They would dox agents, mm-hmm.
And they would, you know, you can put a patrol car out front, but I mean, ideally, yeah, maybe you just kind of lay low for a little bit. The best part is no matter what happens, unless it's super egregious, people will forget, something will happen, and time is kind of that magic element. But again, going back to, and I've seen this happen where if you make it a point to short stroke, or you make it a point to hide things, or you at least appear that way,
evasive lying,
you're going to create so much more bullshit down the road. Where I feel like as of late, and this was kind of post George Floyd, and SAC PDs, they still are. They will, as soon as something happens, the investigation is done, they will blast it out, and usually with a video that shows every single thing that happened. 9 times out of 10, even if it would be a traditional, here we fucking go, you know, we're going to do a whole protest. No, they watch it. And even the people who are on that side of the fence go, yuck, that kind of makes sense. So I think if.
So it's wild that we're in a period of time where they have to do that to appease, or at least to like, hey, you know, it's Rome, you know. Roman rules about, you know, the circus, you know.
And if you appease it, I mean, it might save you a headache later. And this is being a cop who went through 2020 and a bunch of others who did with me. I mean, that's, no one wants to do that shit again. And we had it easy where I'm at. I talked to coworkers in some of the bigger cities. Fuck that.
I was around in Portland and Atlanta, and it was not
easy. It's crazy.
Not a good time to be a cop. When we, like, where we are now, you know, somebody asked me this recently, if my kid said, hey, I want to go into law enforcement in the U.S., mm-hmm. I would immediately say no.
Yeah.
And it's weird to say that because I have a bunch of friends who are law enforcement. I respect the shit out of them. They're amazing people. Some of them are great human beings. But I just know that the whole system around them is hard. It's going to be very hard. And I know where some of this degradation of standards and training and just being vilified leads to. Like, what would you say to somebody who is thinking about a future in law enforcement the way things are now?
I would tell them that it's the greatest job ever. I love what I do. I really do. I don't really know what I would see myself doing otherwise. I mean, in hindsight, like, oh, a poet or a farmer would have been.
Is it getting better?
Yeah, no, it's definitely getting better.
Why don't we see that? Why don't we hear that? If you ask me just from my experience, looking at how things are going, I'd say it's getting worse.
I would say, and this is, again, going back to like ground zero. So 2020,
yeah,
it's better. But what my concern is what we've had to give up to make it get better.
What did you have to give up?
We had to quite literally change a lot. We changed the hiring standards. We changed a lot of things that would traditionally be non-negotiable to negotiable. And
like what? Like
I would say background issues. So
like this is great. Like,
yeah.
So like, what type of things would exclude you in the past that are now being like, you're being waved through?
I would even limit it to like, if you're talking to someone and they're like, yeah, I want, and you're in your mind, you're going, there's no way you should do this. And it's just a bad idea. That, not to say that's all that's being hired, but they're definitely in the mix. We have to fill the boots on the ground because per capita, there is a demand from the public that we shall respond. And we nationally, I think this isn't just California, we've started to sort of expand the net, right? But we're not fixing these huge holes in the net. We're just sort of ignoring them. Yeah. And once someone falls through, you know, we'll see what happens. And I think that the more that we make something relaxed, the more that it'll stay that way forever. And then how far do we go? How far do we?
Yeah. How long do we keep these standards at this level?
With the mentality of I'm too scared to do anything. And I'll just say it. There's a lot. The movie, The Departed. It's a great movie. But in that, there's a scene where he gets asked, you know, do you want to be a cop or do you want to appear to be a cop? It's an honest question. It really is. And
it's a beautiful question.
Yeah, either you really want to get in this job to do it, to get your hands fucking dirty, not dirty in a bad way, but actually come home and say, I really made a difference today by any means necessary. That mentality is not the normal thought process for the younger generation. It's more of, it's an online presence, or it's a part of my life that's an identity. And, you know, if we were to look at, you know, someone who does contracting, did you get into contracting because you wanted to build houses, or do you want to wear a tool belt in the grocery store when you're done? Like, no one cares.
No one gives a shit.
So we're seeing that with this new generation, and it's happened before. It'll happen again. We've done this in the 20s, the 50s. There's all these different generations that we're going to have to live through. We're just in a really weird transitionary period where guys like you and I are looking at the new guys going, what the fuck are you doing? And they're looking at us going, nothing. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It's going to, I think, get worse before it gets better. But at the same time, this may be the new normal, and we just have to learn to work with it.
Do you, when you say, well, I mean, so you think it's, do you think it's just still worth it to go into this line of work?
It has to be. Because if we, if, I mean, I him and ha, right? If my kids said I want to be a cop, I'll be like, oh God. I would support them. I would do what my dad did. And I'm going to support you in whatever you do. If you want to be a figure skater or you want to be interpretive, I don't care. I'll support anything you want to do. I don't give a shit. Whatever makes you happy, but my rule still stands, just like my dad did, that you have to give more than you take. And you can do that in any capacity. You don't have to work in public service. You can you can be a real estate agent and just be the best one ever. And you're just good at what you do and you have a passion for it. That's all that matters. But if some random kid came up to me and said, hey, I want to be a cop, is it a good idea? I would really kind of put it back on that mat. It really is up to you. Ask yourself why you're doing this. And if the answer is, you know, anything outside of the realm of just trying to make the world a better place, then maybe it's not the right time, or you should reevaluate your reasons, because we don't need any more ego trips. We don't need any more people to prove themselves. I mean, and again, those are far and few between, but they're the ones who are going to be on the front page eventually, not the guys who are level-headed.
Yeah. So things are getting better.
I think so. But I also think that there's political factors. There's all kinds of things that make a difference. It's not just as easy as saying cop world. Cop world is dictated by law and policy. Law and policy is dictated by our political leaders. For me, living in California, I can say 100% that our political leadership has destroyed the state where I'm living in, which makes my job extremely difficult. And trying to explain that to someone who's in the neutral realm of politics, half of them don't even really know. Like, what did I vote for? Prop 47? Fucked California. It still is. And for those who don't know what that is, it happened in 2014. I hope I got the date right. But it essentially made a lot of felonies, misdemeanors, and misdemeanors infractions. And it had a lot to do with just a reduction in sentencing charges, a variety of issues that happened because of it. That one thing that was labeled the Safe Schools Act, it destroyed it.
Yeah. San Francisco was a good example. It's a
great example.
I remember visiting San Francisco in 2008 versus 2020.
Very different. And I love San Francisco.
Yeah, I remember when I went there, I was like, I want to go back. Yeah. And when I did, it was like,
it's terrible.
It's fucking empty. Empty. Yeah. Like this, the downtown area is boarded up. Yeah. I mean, the only thing going on there is the crazy people fucking screaming.
Mm-hmm. And every part of that goes to every other part of the community, because the drug aspect, I mean, as you know, it's the worst it's ever been, but you couple that with the just complete lack of
rules.
Yeah. I mean, it's Gotham.
Grab anything.
People can do whatever they want. And we have all of these really big issues. But, you know, even the K Street shooting a couple of years ago in Sacramento, that made national headlines. And the next day, President Biden talked about gun control, which was, I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. It was a bunch of gang members out of Del Paso Heights with fully automatic Glocks, guns that are completely illegal to own in California by people who are prohibited by law to possess them. It has nothing to fucking do with guns. It has to do with guys who should still be in custody, but they're not because of
these laws.
Propositions and assembly bills. And, you know, you had Hector Bravo, who's just a really interesting guy, but his internal workings and knowledge of the CDCR,
yeah,
it's even scarier,
yeah,
than
yeah.
what's on the street,
yeah,
and it's just going to get worse. So in a long-winded answer, I mean, if I had to talk to someone about what they were thinking for their future, I would really consider what's on the table in terms of, like, where do you want to work? If you're young and single, go somewhere else for now. I mean, I love California. It's my home. I love so many things about it, but it comes with a price, literally and figuratively. And it is slowly getting destroyed by a cancer that can be stopped, but is blatantly ignored by leadership.
Yeah, sad. I get asked about, you know, career advice, and I'm like, don't ask me for advice on my career. I'm like, hey, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
I was like, legit, just it was this or something else.
Yeah.
And the other something else would probably have landed me in a grave or jail or worse. Because there's worse things than being in prison and dying.
For sure.
There are way worse things than that. I had to do all the shit that I did. I guess, I don't know. I believe a lot in generational curses.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're real. I don't think specifically related to ghost or demonic possessions or anything like that. People can put them in that category if they want, but I think it's this unconscious transference of pain, trauma, guilt, addiction that we have. Like, it took me years to figure out that my mom did an amazing job with me until she couldn't. Then I got pretty upset about the fact that she couldn't be a mother to me anymore after what happened with my brother. But in the end, and I learned this through my daughter, you know. Yeah. We had a day at school, and it was like a career day thing, which is always fucking interesting on my end. So I went there, and I gave all the kids a personal alarm. I showed them how to make and carry personal alarms with them.
Oh, that's cool.
Right? So these pull-apart alarms, and each of them has a little glow ball that I bought, and I just showed them how to put it together and how to put it on their belt. So if you're in public and you get separated from your mom or something happens or just freaking out, just turn it on, right? Or I showed them how to set up a little tripwire for it for doors because it had to be cool. And these kids were really into the explanation. And I saw my daughter beaming. She was like, Dad. Yeah.
You're like Batman when you go to career.
Dad's fucking just doing all this shit. And I realized that my mom did not have a father. And the father that she did have was a fucking piece of shit. Horrible things to them. So my mother raised a son that could be the dad that she never had. Mm-hmm. And that's when my daughter gets to enjoy.
Interesting.
So in a lot of aspects, I always think about this in that sense, and that provides me with a lot of mental peace, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna get to enjoy the fruits of the work that I'm doing. She is. Or somebody else in the further down the line will.
Generational, yeah.
So I think the way you get out of them is to give up on your own delusion of being able, like you say, going back to normal or, you know, being normal or all that shit. And I remember having this vision when I was trying the alternative medication aspect of life, mushrooms.
Yeah,
they do something. I have too much brain damage to have them help me completely, but I had a vision of this. It was like a panther this big cat chasing me and my daughter. It's just running after us. And I keep turning towards it and fighting it. And then it keeps trying to push me aside so it can go after my kid. And I just grab it by the tail if I can just and beat it the shit with a rock and just start running back behind my kid. And it keeps getting back up, running after both of us. And it just dawns on me that it's not gonna stop. So I grab it and drown it. But every time I let it go, it starts coming back to the surface. So I just realize I have to drown with it. I have to kill it with me.
Yeah, that's the
only way.
Yeah,
it's the only way. We're also gonna get, or else it'll get my kid. And I think every now and then I get people that talk to me about visions and doing these ayahuasca trips and shit like that. I always ask them, like, what did you see, fucker? Like, if it's true, what did you learn? And I've gotten some pretty powerful visions.
Yeah.
And that one was pretty spot on, I guess. If there's anything that a lot of us struggle with when we go through shit like that, is that we want to somehow make it to a good, better place where we're safe, where, you know, either Jesus finds us or Allah or whatever God you think is there to give you this pretty house on a hill and a wife and kids and a few dogs, and it's going to be great and fine and happy. And that's sometimes not what we get.
Very rarely. Dogs, so, yes, but I don't have a picket fence. I never will. And my life is chaos most of the time.
I got house plants. I don't got any debt, which is great. But that's about it. And an amazing 10-year-old.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
Kids are a game changer.
Oh, yeah. Sure. It's your heart is outside of your chest and it's walking around. It changes that you're vulnerable now. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I guess, a big aspect of just the kind of like the context of some of this conversation we've had is healing and the mental aspects of going through trauma and going through this law enforcement lifestyle, just being in a life of service where you give up a lot and you do a lot. And on the other end of it, you're trying to find some sort of relief for yourself or escape or justification or, I don't know, like a conclusion that you're comfortable with or an ending or a place to go. And
the ending's the hard part.
Yeah.
Where does it stop?
Yeah.
I think it was you who talked about it once, and I've talked about it before. The bus. You're on the bus and you better be fucking damn sure that this is the right time. And if it's not, you're going to spend the rest of your life wondering, but you do have to get off.
Yeah.
Eventually
you're just going to be this bus of everything. This bus, it's like, people don't know what the bus is. It's like, for me, the bus was going on this experiment, this government experiment, where they were going to try and militarize this police unit and use it to fucking go after these ginormous criminal organization, right? Everything mattered. Everything was life and death. Everything was important. Everybody there was your brother, and they would kill and do shit for you if you asked them to, and we all had each other's backs, and everything was of the utmost importance, and everything was valuable, and everything mattered, and food tasted great, and sex was amazing. After you would go through some shit like that, you would come back, and it was just... And all of a sudden, it ends.
All that dopamine goes bye-bye.
You know, all that dopamine does go bye-bye, and I grew up with undiagnosed ADHD, so I already had a dopamine deficiency by the time I made it to puberty. So the little bit of dopamine I had, it just goes away, and it's not all of us get to have that happy ending, I guess. You know, but it could be a peaceful one.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
If I keep trying to search for that, I'll just be looking for that forever. And I'm very, it sounds so weird to say, but all the things that I've got to experience, especially the past 4 years, I'm so grateful. It's a weird thing to say, but I'm so grateful for having to suffer and to see just kind of a different side of life. And I really wonder, where would I be right now? I wouldn't be here. I'd be doing something else. And who's to say that without some of the things that happened to me, would I be living a healthy life? I don't think so. I think that what I thought was a good way of doing business was probably a bad way. And my brain chose to really just say, no, this is a terrible way to do it. So we're going to force you to change.
Yeah. And it's a pretty good idea to have some sort of semblance of, or idea of what that change is going to be and not just fucking walk into the wood chipper.
Yeah. I mean, knee-jerk reactions are fine, but, you know, I always tell people it's that same theory about an email. Don't send it. Put it in drafts. Come back, read it the next day. And you're going to go, gosh, yeah, that looks bad. It's the same thing with anything else you do. So
yeah,
doing something on a whim is probably never a good idea. In terms
every
of
single tragedy you are trying to avoid in your life will eventually happen.
Yeah. Don't force
your
it.
House is going to fall apart.
Uh-huh.
Every single person you know in your life is going to die.
Yeah.
Unless you get some vampires out there, they're into the adrenal chrome, I guess. But Blade. Most of them, Pelosi. most of them are going to die.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. I've read Zen material, and I grew up with the Book of Five Rings. And
is that the Musashi? Yeah.
Like that was my Bible.
Yeah.
And I grew up with the Bible as well. I don't know. I keep coming back to the same kind of a conclusion on my end of, it's about making, you know, you can't go back in time. There's nobody there. So you can't fix anything not there. The future doesn't exist. So worrying about it doesn't fucking do anything. You know, everything bad you're trying to avoid will happen. You know, your milk is going to go bad. You know, the house is going to fall apart. All of that's going to happen anyways. So what do you have left? Now.
That's it.
That's it. If you can't be present, and if you don't have now, you don't have anything. And a lot of the issues that most of us have when it comes to trauma, pain, or just having an unfulfilled life of some sort is that the lack of being able to be present.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Too preoccupied with trying to find like the happy ending thing. What if it's never going to come?
Yeah.
You're going to spend your whole life trying to find something that's never there.
I had the universe spoke to me 2 days ago. I just had my birthday. I was, these past 3 years have been pretty not easy for me. You know, it's been a lot of solitude, a lot of, fixing parts of myself or just adjusting and trying to figure out, you know, my life in general. And a lot of concluding long drawn out processes of sobriety, therapy and programs. And you're like, somehow you think, oh, this is it. Then this is going to be I don't know. You don't even know what your year is going to look like. You just have this perception that everything's going to be fine after this. Somehow you're going to fix your shit, right? But it's never that. So it was pretty, this year has been pretty fucking rough. Just like the last few. I had my kid with me. Like I didn't have a party or anything like that. Just all I wanted for my birthday was just me and my kid. And she's 10, but she's like 80 internally.
Yeah.
You know?
Old soul.
Old soul.
That's good though.
Old soul. She's like, so what do you want for your birthday? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, you don't know what you want for your birthday. Like, what would you want? She said, cake. Like, yeah, like for breakfast. Like, what? Yeah, I want cake for breakfast. That's what I would ask for. It's like, that's fucking amazing. Let's
do it.
Let's figure out cake for breakfast. So I ordered the tres leches cake. A big one. There's still some in the fridge. and for breakfast, me and her sat down and had two giant slices of it.
Nice.
And both of us were wired that morning. that if everything ended that day, that would have been enough. And I think that's, well, that's, that took me years to get to.
Can't top it. Until the next one.
Until the next one. Yeah. I think most of life are just these moments.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. And if you can find peace in the fact that these moments are going to go away and they're temporary, and that's what makes them moments like that. That's where you get. That's all we have. Yeah. You know, now that's about it. Mac, I want to thank you for joining us for this cool ass conversation. We've been talking online for a while. Where can people find out more about you, the work you do, and some of the things you talk about online?
So I have an Instagram, I have a blog, and I have a podcast channel. My plans is to go get my master's degree in psychology, and when I'm ready, I will exit, and my plan is to do clinical therapy for specific to first responders and probably more so law enforcement, but
it's needed.
Yeah.
It's needed.
The problem for me is that once I make that decision, it's a done deal. So after looking at the programs, it's a 2-year program. And once I start, though, that's my time clock. I'm not done yet. So yeah. I'm currently working a sex assault, child abuse, which has just been, I know it sounds terrible, it's been a lot of fun. It's a lot of good cases. I love my case, I love my coworkers. I love what I do. I'm not ready to walk away yet. So even if I were to promote or something else, I still have more gas in the tank. I don't want to walk away knowing that I could have
done more. But it's time for an exit strategy.
Exactly. So that is the long term. But for now, the blog is just kind of, it's mostly mirroring what I do on the podcast. But the Zen Cop podcast is on Spotify, YouTube, and iTunes. Sorry, I'm more of a Spotify guy these days. And then the holster thing, I do get a lot of questions on that. It's something I do for fun on the side. It's not a business that I do full time. So if people are interested, just be patient with me.
And they're cool as shit.
Thank you. They're fun.
I'll post mine
that
later.
That is like, I can't, and my wife loves it when I do it because she's like, it seems like you're doing something. You're exercising a part of your brain that,
yeah,
that I'm really artistic and I like that stuff. So when I'm doing that, it kind of just clears my head. So I get maybe one day a week though to do that stuff. So if
it's good, it's good to have something.
Oh yeah, it's a blast. I like it.
I don't know how to make anything. I just troll people online.
Yeah,
that's make the Pioneer Woman knife the best selling knife in North America.
I was cracking up when
that's what I do.
What she say, like, stop tagging me in these, please? Or that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, there was a cease and desist, or something. I don't know. It was. That's what I just like. I'm an anarchist by heart. That's my whole thing that I do on the weekends. Again, thank you for coming down and having this conversation. And hopefully, I can jump on your podcast and continue this conversation and invite you back if there's anything law enforcement related, use of force related, trauma related to kind of talk about it.
Yeah,
would you be down for that?
Absolutely.
Because I know people get a lot of questions, just like myself, like, what happens after a shooting? Like, what do you see? Like,
yeah,
these aspects, I think, would be pretty cool to kind of, like, deconstruct for people.
Yeah. I'm less scared because going to Tijuana, it wasn't scary, but I have a coworker who's like, I don't want you to end up on Reddit. I was like, no, God. No, it's actually really fun. So,
But Baltimore. Don't go to Baltimore. Yeah, Tijuana's fine. Right?
It was fun.
I'm from Tijuana. I've been to Baltimore.
Baltimore's horrible. But. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Baltimore. I apologize. Baltimore is great. I'm sorry. But it's kind of, there's some shit there. Again, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.